Zootiful has signed on. Zootiful.
Way to flee the scene of the crime, you Hindenburg of first impressions.
Smartimus.
I just got home, and this is how you greet me?
Smartimus.
Look, it's not my fault your country bumpkin cousin is about as friendly as a minefield.
Zootiful.
And why aren't you answering any of my texts?
Smartimus.
My phone ran out of juice.
Zootiful.
Fat chance. So, why the Hydra vibe today?
Smartimus.
What do you mean?
I was perfectly nice to him.
Zootiful.
I don't mean just that, idiot. Gosh, this friendship is so terminated.
Smartimus.
What did I do?
Zootiful.
You've just been all uptight today.
Smartimus.
Have not.
Zootiful.
You threw a roll of toilet paper at me from over the top of your bathroom stall when I told you that your socks were falling down. What gives?
Zootiful.
Hello?
Zootiful.
Hello?
Smartimus.
I just don't like fighting with my mom, that's all. Jeez.
Zootiful.
Fine, if that's how it's gonna be.
Zootiful invited Wally Best and Disastrous Dick to this conversation. Smartimus.
No.
Wally Best has entered the chat. Smartimus.
Zatanna.
Disastrous Dick has entered the chat.
Disastrous Dick. New screen name. What do you think?
Wally Best.
Why am I here?
Smartimus.
Dick, you are an insult to the human race. Get out of my sight.
Wally Best.
Oh, look, it's Sunnybrook Farm.
Wally Best has sent you a contact request. Accept. Decline. Wally Best was added to your contacts. Smartimus.
Excuse me?
Zootiful.
Wally is really terrible at insults. Ignore him.
Wally Best.
You can shut the
asterisk up. Zootiful.
Whoa.
Smartimus.
Whoa. Disastrous Dick. I can override the sensor program for you.
Wally Best.
If you come anywhere near my house, I'll knock your teeth in with a toaster.
Zootiful.
That's my house and my $600 toaster.
Wally Best.
Disgusting.
Smartimus.
Jeez, West. Your whole threat is toast now. Looks like somebody's sleeping on the patio tonight.
Wally Best.
Actually, I'll be sleeping in a bed, unlike someone else in here.
Smartimus.
And where, oh where, does your fascinating imagination assume I sleep?
Wally Best.
A dragon nest, maybe.
Wally Best.
Or like, the top of a very deadly cliff.
Wally Best.
So you can push people off.
Smartimus.
Wow, Zatanna's right. Your insults are terrible.
Wally Best.
Not as terrible as your Rudolph jokes, Blondie.
Zootiful.
Hello?
Disastrous Dick.
Lovely weather we're having.
Smartimus.
At least I could get a few syllables out of my mouth. Is that how you usually try out for stuff? By stammering and tripping?
Wally Best.
Excuse me, who got on the team? Oh, that's right, someone not named. Wally Best.
Whatever your name is.
Wally Best.
Who are you again?
Smartimus.
Oh my god! How can you get mad at me for ribbing you when your entire life is a joke?
Wally Best.
Jesus, you're unpleasant.
Zootiful.
I agree, Dick. Very lovely weather.
Disastrous, Dick. In fact, it's so lovely that everyone should be outside in it, frolicking around.
Smartimus.
What's the matter? Is your wealth of creative insults failing you? The crowd is shocked.
Wally Best.
Zatanna, if you don't boot her from the chat, I swear.
Smartimus.
Aw, running away! How cute!
Wally Best.
I will kill you.
Smartimus.
Sounds delightful. When should I pick you up?
Disastrous Dick.
Sorry, not everyone.
Disastrous Dick.
These two need to stay inside.
Disastrous Dick.
In a room.
Disastrous Dick.
The room that they need to get.
Wally Best.
No one cares about your blathering, Grayson.
Disastrous Dick.
I'm not sure I own a blathering, Grayson. You must be mistaken.
Wally Best.
Nerds. I'm surrounded by nerds.
I'm going to bed.
Smartimus.
Z, are you even alive?
Zootiful.
Yes, sorry. Billy Batson just posted a new picture on his Facebook of him saving a cat.
Zootiful.
Heart.
Wally Best.
Gross.
Smartimus.
Ew.
Disastrous Dick.
If it's pictures that grab your interest, I could hook you up with a few choice ones of the computer club president.
Disastrous Dick.
Sources confirm that he is a stud.
Smartimus.
Gross.
Wally Best.
Ew.
Zootiful.
No, but seriously, Wally and Artemis, you guys need to apologize to each other.
Wally Best.
What?
Wally Best.
What?
Smartimus.
What do I have to apologize for? I was perfectly friendly.
Wally Best.
LOL.
Wally Best.
Tell that to the thousands of human souls that died in your presence in that exact moment.
Smartimus.
Souls don't die, moron. Haven't you seen the Iron Giant?
Zootiful.
Oh my gosh, Artemis, I wish you could see his face.
Wally Best.
Shut up.
Wally Best.
The point is, you were definitely not friendly, and if you thought you were, then you're obviously clinically insane.
Wally Best.
Can I go, please? I have AP Physics to do.
Zootiful.
Artemis has been needing help with science.
Wally Best.
Is that so?
Smartimus.
No!
Smartimus.
Certifiably, I am actually a science prodigy.
Wally Best.
Is that so?
Zootiful.
I will rip your throat out with my floweriest rings, Artemis Croc.
Disastrous Dick.
I found a pic of Vladimir Putin riding a horse shirtless. Anyone interested?
Smartimus.
I don't need your help, West.
Wally Best.
I didn't even offer it, Goldie, so I guess you're set.
Smartimus.
Good! Because I don't want it! Or need it! So don't flatter yourself!
Wally Best.
I wasn't, though.
Smartimus.
The way you're going, you must have to go through a ton of self-flattery just to get through the day.
Wally Best.
I'm leaving, Zatanna.
Disastrous Dick.
After all these years? Say it ain't so.
Smartimus.
Zatanna Zatara, divorcee at 15. American tragedy.
Disastrous Dick.
Wally, please, listen to me. That girl from the Folie Bergère will quickly tire of you, and then you'll be alone. Don't do it, old friend!
Wally Best.
Bunch of freaks.
Zootiful invited
Baseball Batson
to this conversation. Smartimus.
What?
Wally Best.
What?
Disastrous Dick.
What?
Baseball Batson
has entered the chat.
Baseball Batson.
Hey guys! Disastrous Dick
has left the chat.
Wally Best
and Smartimus have left the chat. Zootiful.
Well, well, well.
It's weird going back home. Not in a bad way or anything. It's just, her mom actually doesn't try to kill or disown her. Nor does she even get on her case about anything. Artemis even accidentally lets the door slam, but it's met with no rebuke. When she crosses the threshold, bracing herself for projectiles, she only hears a serene and neutral welcome home from Paula's bedroom. And as she meanders past it, she sees Paula with her red reading glasses on, raptly engrossed in an open copy of The Grapes of Wrath in her lap. And like, Artemis doesn't really have a right to press the issue, because really, who in their right mind would ask their mom to yell at them? But by the time dinner's a half an hour away, and Paula still hasn't knocked on her door, hasn't even hollered at her to come in and help, she can't hold it in anymore.
Is everything okay?
She finally asks, when, as she goes to the fridge to get a can of root beer so she can briefly escape the chemistry she is still critically unable to do, she spots a pot of bún bò huế, her favorite, on the stove.
Paula wheels herself in from the living room and at the sight of Artemis in her same old battered lounge clothes.
Of course, she says crisply, shooting Artemis out of the way and halting in front of the stove. She grasps the ladle in one hand, stirring steadily. You have had a long couple of days. I wanted to make you something special, as a reward for not shattering psychologically.
Thanks, Mom,
Artemis mutters, unsurely, prying open the can until it hisses. She slips her hand into the pocket of her pants, sipping the soda with the other.
Listen, I'm sorry for booking it last night. Frankly, I would have been concerned if you hadn't.
Paula interrupts, and she slows her stirring, glancing up at Artemis with a warm but resigned expression. I'm just glad you are safe.
Why?
Artemis swallows, because she doesn't even know why she's asking this. It's so stupid.
Why are you acting like nothing happened?
Paula hums pensively and sets down her spoon. She maneuvers herself around so that she's facing Artemis, and right away, Artemis hunkers down to eye level on one knee. Paula reaches forward and grasps Artemis's hand in hers. Artemis gulps against the hard lump that has apparently decided to form in her throat. All I have ever wanted, Artemis, her mother tells her gently, is to provide comfort and love for you. Comfort and love and understanding. And no matter what happens, no matter who barges into your life, this place, these walls, will always be the same for you. This will always be home, and we will always have dinner at 6 o'clock, and you will always have to do the dishes. That clock in the living room will always be 10 minutes fast,
the television will always be just slightly short of working. And I will always be here to welcome you home after a long day. And I will always remind you to study and work hard and get plenty of sleep and eat your breakfast.
Wow. Mom, way to go from possibly best mom to definitely best mom. Your preferences about door treatment will never again be condemned or questioned.
Paula's eyes are glimmering and blinking a little. And now that Artemis actually pays attention to her own face, she notices that it's pretty damp at the cheeks. Oh, great. Why does she never get the memo until after she's crying? Thanks, brain.
I love you, Paula whispers in Vietnamese, smoothing Artemis's hair back. My darling girl, I will be your constant. It's probably the best dinner of Artemis's life, hands down.
Good enough for her to forget she has detention on Friday.
Womp womp.
And speaking of detention on Friday, the rest of the week passes with absolutely no concrete or memorable moments. And Artemis just kind of floats half-consciously through it, still bogged down by ugly phrases like international affairs, and lineage, and sole heir, and princess lessons with an eccentric goateed man. Like, honestly, as far as first weeks of school go, it's just as forgettable as every other one, in a sort of post-traumatic amnesia way. But the universe cannot guilt Artemis into regretting this, because she has bigger problems. So many bigger problems. She doesn't even notice, really, that starting on Thursday, Wally starts to join her, Zatanna, and Dick for lunch. Apparently, he attempts talking to her, but she's so catatonic that she doesn't notice or reply. Which, Zatanna tells her in a suspiciously annoyed voice, is not helping her chances with him in the slightest, because now he hates her even more. Yeah, like Artemis really cares about Wally West's opinion of her, when she has oil crises and global warming and the United Nations to worry about. Possibly. She'll probably just start with posture now that she thinks about it, instead of, like, the proper ducking technique when being fired at by an AK-47. She really hopes she won't have to do that thing where they make her walk the length of the library in a straight line while balancing a copy of War and Peace on her head. She will literally die. It's not like she was ignoring Wally. Well, okay, she was. That's exactly what she was doing. But not on purpose. Not that she'd voluntarily have a friendly chat with him either, but... ugh, he's just so... ugh, obtuse. Maybe if he'd actually lower his guns and give her a chance. No. Wait, she doesn't need a chance. She was super approachable and friendly. He was the one who had to go and be all overly sensitive and judgmental and rude. What is she saying? It's kind of a bummer, though. Because his eyes are really green. She wonders how far down his freckles go. Ew, no, not like that. Like, does he have them on his chest? Get your mind out of the sewer. Bruce Wayne isn't happy with her work ethic either, from what Dick keeps prattling smugly about. To be fair, though, Artemis would be annoyed with herself, too, if, in the middle of roll call, she had to go up to her own desk and yell her own name to get any kind of response. From herself. Shut up, it works. Whatever. Artemis wades through all of it and eats all of her lunch like a good girl and beats her mile time in PE, but that's actually just because apparently when she zones out, she starts sprinting at like 90 miles per hour. Wally had been so pissed off when Zatanna had told him the tale of Artemis's unconscious superspeed. Good. Pissing off Wally is a worthy pastime, Artemis is quickly discovering. His ears turn red, and he starts speaking too fast to get his words out correctly, and when he really loses it, he stress eats from the stash of Twinkies in his locker. Let Artemis clarify. By stash of Twinkies, she means literal panel-to-panel Berlin Wall of Twinkies. That somehow never shrinks, no matter how many packets she sees Wally scoop out per day like some kind of long-reach excavator. She hopes that Oliver won't try to prepare her crude palate for caviar and lobster by refusing to let her eat Twinkies. Oh! And it also turns out that Wally is in the same independent study period as Artemis is. And by extension, Dick, Zatanna, and the Bats and Dweeb. He's missed the first 4 days because of track tryouts and extra transfer orientation stuff, so Artemis kind of finds this out by accident. And by accident, she means she sits on him. Look, he was in her chair, okay? The one between Zatanna and Dick? It's totally natural that her instinctual drive to flop down in it in the same way every day would override her ability to plainly see a red-haired dude sitting there. Needless to say, Wally doesn't take it very well. He yells in panic, and his arms go flailing out, and Artemis leaps back up with such force that she knocks him off balance so that he and the chair tip over backwards and clatter to the floor. Bruce Wayne looks up sharply with death in his eyes, rising to his feet immediately. Artemis quickly wrenches the fallen chair out from under Wally's possibly dead body and rights it, sitting down with her knees together and scooting deftly up to the edge of the table, all before Wayne comes to a looming halt in front of her, nostrils flaring. Wally groans and swears from the floor. Out of the corner of her eye, Artemis sees Zatanna and Dick doubled over with matching hands over their eyes and synchronized quaking shoulders. "West, get up," Wayne barks. Wally has sprung into a ramrod straight standing position in a blink. "Take your assigned seat," Wayne orders, pointing rigidly to the spot on Dick's right. Dick perks up, pats the chair, and beams toothily at Wally, who looks like he's just swallowed a peeled lemon. It takes him a second to abandon his pride and shuffle mulishly over to where he's told, but he still does. Artemis catches his eye and smirks complacently, causing his lips to thin and his jaw to clench. "Croc," Wayne snaps to her, making her jump. "Refrain from sitting on your peers. You know that students are to keep at least a finger to elbow length away from each other at all times." Yeah, so Artemis's school has a mortal fear that teenagers hugging each other or shaking hands will evolve into wild public sex. Now you know. "Right," Artemis croaks, and then clears her throat and sits up straighter. Wayne nods, satisfied, but his eyes are still dangerously narrowed as he backs away, staring them down all the way to his desk. A few minutes after Wayne's gotten back to whatever papers he's grading, Artemis's motor cortex finally comes back to life. It's just in time, too, to hear how obviously Dick is sniggering next to her. She snaps her head over to scowl at him so sharply that she's surprised it doesn't give her whiplash. "Something funny?" she snarls under her breath. Dick waves a silencing hand at her, covering his eyes with his other and shaking noiselessly now. She purses her lips sourly, but forces herself to yank her chemistry notebook out of her bag, slam it onto the table, and flick it open to the page with her homework worksheet. A great way to improve her mood! Total intellectual failure! A while later, just when she's pretty sure her brain is about to implode, Dick elbows her carefully. "What?" she hisses without looking up. When he doesn't respond, her eyes dart over to him. He throws a hand up in surrender and slips her a folded note.
She frowns, glances over at Zatanna, who's engrossed in her AP Italian homework, and looks back to the note again. If it's not from her, then it's probably from the Vlatovan Secret Service. That is how likely it is that someone besides Zatanna would pass her notes in class. She unfolds it. There's a single sentence, printed in cramped, doctorish handwriting, in bright red Sharpie. That's the last time I wear my invisibility cloak to school. Artemis shoots Wally the deadliest look in her arsenal. He doesn't notice, engrossed a little too deeply in what looks like physics. She glares harder. Still nothing. She scribbles on the page and jabs Dick's side to get him to pass it back. Trust me, invisibility looks good on you. You're doing everyone a favor. It comes back just a second later, after an instant of feverish scrawling during which Wally's tongue is clenched between his teeth, and Artemis forgets not to stare. Maybe I should loan it to you sometime. I'd be a hero for hiding you from innocent civilians for a day. Did I hurt your knee or your feelings? Leave me alone, I'm studying. Yeah, and going by the tortured look on your face, I can see that's going swell. Artemis wrinkles her nose when she reads that one. When she glowers over at Wally, he waggles his eyebrows at her smugly. She crumples the paper up and tosses it over her shoulder. Littering, Miss Croc? Wayne growls. Why? Sir, she croaks. Sir, no, I was a... It doesn't matter. Wayne sighs, waving her into silence. Artemis clamps her mouth shut. Class is over. Right on the button, the bell trills. Artemis will never know how he does it. Those of you needing to serve detention time, stay in your seats. Mr. Kent will be here shortly. Oh, score! Mr. Kent is Artemis's English teacher, and she's pretty sure he never learned how to yell at people, or get angry at people, or even mildly irritated, or even infinitesimally put out. He's so inhumanly nice and wholesomely Midwestern that he's been late to class before because he had to stop on the way to school and save an abandoned kitten. Mr. Kent has so many cats and dogs. It's unreal. The point is, detention is going to be a breeze. Good night and good luck, Zatanna sighs, as she stands and slings her bag on her shoulder. She gives Artemis's shoulder a good few commiserating pats as the last of the students trickle out. Among them, Billy Batson, who fixes her with a lovelorn look before walking into the wall next to the doorway. Text me when you're out. Ooh, me too, Dick croons, popping up between them with his leather briefcase backpack firmly strapped on. Wayne sends them all one last skeptical look before exiting. I'm absolutely dying to know what's all the rage in... Zatanna purses her lips, and, with one hand, shoves Dick's face away. Artemis bites her lip, and Zatanna, seeming satisfied at her paltry amusement, spins around, hair swirling behind her, and flounces out with Dick scurrying in her wake. Wait. Just as it clicks into place in Artemis's head, she hears Wally sigh beside her, kicking his feet up on the table. She turns, rigidly, in her seat to stare at him, half horror and half inconsolable rage, and he blows a bubble of his yellow gum, staring boredly at the ceiling. The man said leave, she grits out, like she still has hope. So leave. Wally ignores her and picks at his teeth. You can't be serious, she mutters to herself, slumping against the desktop and pinching the bridge of her nose. The classroom is completely empty, except for the two of them. Ugh, this can't be happening. Something wrong? Wally drawls, chewing his gum deliberately and loudly. Snaps of teeth and bursts of now stale but innocent. Artemis picks aggressively at her fingernails, keeping her eyes riveted on the clock, and doesn't reply. Wally's chewing quiets and lessens. Every tick of the clock feels remarkably similar to a syringe being stuck in Artemis's eye. They hear the door open, and both turn their heads over their shoulders in unison. Judging by Wally's scoff, this synchronicity offends him greatly. Good. Here's what first alerts Artemis to the fact that she'll be sharing detention with Connor Kent. Motorcycle boots, scuffing and clanking on the linoleum. Then, a perpetual grumbling sound seeming to come from everywhere at once. A bottle opener keychain jingling against a backpack zipper. And the final clue. Mr. Kent's voice placatingly saying, "Now, don't be angry." Okay. This is definitely where Artemis's life is going to come to an unfortunate end. Because that is what happens to people who get locked up with Connor Kent and a cup of sharpened pencils for an hour. Connor Kent, chiseled brooding beefcake with two dads, and a deep-seated, constant struggle with his own disgruntled, sometimes pugnacious SAT vocab outlook on life. Artemis had had a crush on him in, like, the third grade, when they'd both happened to attend the same elementary school, and he'd broken a kid's nose with a tetherball and his own force of will. But he just got scowlier and scowlier as time went on. And Artemis moved to Calder-er Pastures. And transferred to a school on the other side of town after she used a yo-yo and a windbreaker to mercilessly assault some punk who broke her G.I. Joes, but whatever. The point is, Connor has every girl in the halls and beyond chasing after him because he's got the whole tall, dark, and glowering thing going for him, and he always wears a leather jacket. But Artemis is among the few who know his true nature. Very, very annoyed. He yanks out a chair at the very back table and drops into it like it killed his family and he's going to get revenge by sitting. And as Mr. Kent, one of his two dads, by the way, Artemis is pretty sure that the other one is a CEO who got busted for putting cannabis in some peach-flavored soda drink, makes his way to the front of the room. Connor folds his arms on the desk, scoots all the way up in one go, and drops face down onto them, pulling his hood over his head. Artemis and Wally look at each other at the same time, shrug, and turn away again. "Okay, you three," Mr. Kent announces mildly from his desk, straightening a few papers. "You can talk as much as you like, provided it contains no profanity or words in clear violation of the language chapter of the student handbook. It would be preferred if you'd work on your homework or do a little studying to make the most of this hour, but it's not necessary." He slams his palm down on the desk, and all three of them snap to attention. "There is only one rule," he says calmly. "No reenactments of any scenes from the Breakfast Club will be tolerated." Artemis bites her lip and sniggers. Mr. Kent nods as if satisfied and returns to his papers, flicking through them with concentration. Wally leans slightly over to Artemis. They're still a chair apart. "What's with Soupy over there?" he asks in a whisper. Artemis pulls a face. "What's with what did you call him?" Wally gives her a flat look and nods subtly to Connor. Artemis glances over. He's sitting up now, slumped back in his chair, and he's wearing a faded Superman t-shirt. "His name's Connor, you nitwit," she hisses, turning back to Wally, who looks ruffled. "And nothing's up with him, he's just quiet." "So it's cool if I talk to him," Wally whispers. "I mean, theoretically." Do whatever you want, Artemis tells him tersely. But I'm warning you, he doesn't handle crushes very well. At Wally's audible splutter, she lets a smirk crawl from cheek to cheek. That's not what I... He straightens. If anyone's got the crush here, it's you. Artemis scowls at him. What's that supposed to mean? It's so obvious, Wally expounds, grinning with self-satisfaction. Written all over your face, babe. You've got a bad for our favorite cheekboned wonder. Artemis rolls her eyes as enormously as she can manage without detaching them from her skull, before hunching determinedly over her chemistry homework again. Within a few minutes, she can smell Wally's laundry soap, and she looks over to find him craning his neck over to nose into what she's doing. She jumps. What you got there? He asks conversationally. Artemis remembers Zatanna's hand-to-face trick and promptly shoves Wally away with her palm. He sputters, flailing back. I'm taking AP none of your business, she snarks out. I'm going to shoot for a BA in college. Har har, Wally deadpans. Seriously, do you need help? He puts on what she has come to know as his flirtatious Casanova voice. His help's my middle name, babe. Next time you call me babe, I'll turn your ass into bacon, West. Artemis growls. Mr. Kent looks up sharply. Miss Croc, I specifically told you not to use any profanity. Have you no shame? Somehow, cursing in front of Mr. Kent is always treated like, she doesn't know, murdering a marmot. Marmots are cute, right? Whatever, something cute. You're murdering it. That's how upset he gets when someone swears in his presence. Sorry, she tries to chirp, but it comes out strained. Sorry, Wally echoes in a nasally voice. Artemis wishes that there were no witnesses so she could safely eviscerate him. Seriously, Connor suddenly barks from behind them, and they both jump noticeably. Will both of you just shut up? Artemis' flesh is red. Like, okay, she's not crushing hardcore on Connor anymore, but he's still cute, and he still totally just yelled at her. It's official! Wally West ruins everything! Wally snickers at her sour expression and tilts his chair back, stretching and linking his hands behind his head, elbows askew. Artemis slips her foot under one metal leg of his chair and, in one expert uppercut of her toes, flings it backwards. The string of expletives that explode out of him is enough to make Mr. Kent almost have a stroke. Maybe this day won't be so bad after all. Just kidding! Oliver had phoned Artemis's mom the night before to rattle off the requirements Artemis's wardrobe would need to meet that afternoon. So Artemis has to spend 20 minutes after detention ends wrestling into some nylons and Mary Janes, which she'd managed to conceal expertly in her backpack all day, and fighting her hair into a sorry attempt at a French braid, all in the confines of a cramped ladies' room stall. She bangs her elbow on the toilet paper roll like 11 times. She counts. It takes her about 6 tries to get her lipstick on in a way that doesn't make her look like she just drank blood from a bucket, and she nearly blinds herself in her endeavor to correctly apply mascara, and she just gives up on the whole blush thing, because she almost suffocates from sneezing. The one good thing about detention, at least, is that she doesn't have to come up with some elaborate lie about why she's walking the same way home as Zatanna and Dick, and Wally now. Ugh, she keeps forgetting. But the universe definitely makes up for it in giving her blisters on the backs of her ankles by the time she has miraculously managed to reach Mountain Drive without being stopped by a clown car out hunting for prospective employees. She stops at the summit of the hill, scanning the area. Her eyes alight within seconds upon what absolutely has to be Oliver's villa,
A big stone house with fluttering Vlatavan flags popping out of every conceivable crevice, and a half-visible sunroom and a wall of tulips lining the pathway to the gate. Salvation at last. Sort of. Artemis blows her hair out of her face and marches up the drive, hobbling slightly because of the unbearable Mary Jane-caused agony. She stumps to a halt at the intercom and security code pad, biting the inside of her cheek before mashing her thumb onto the talk button. Yes? Dinah's voice crackles over.
It's me, Artemis grumbles.
Who is me?
Damn her!
Artemis! Artemis replies as sweetly as possible. Artemis Croc, you know, the girl you strong-armed into being princess of your country? A pause, then. Oh, of course, that Artemis Croc. For a moment, I had you confused with a girl who had enough inborn dignity and sense of duty to walk half a mile in uncomfortable shoes and nylons to a lesson for something she supposedly despises. Come on in.
Wow! Damn her! A lot!
Artemis bristles just as the wrought iron gate,
yeah, seriously,
automatically swings open in front of her. Hesitantly, she takes a step forward, and then a few more, before finally throwing caution to the wind and striding in with her arms ramrod straight at her sides. The walkway leading up to the house is paved in solid red brick, flanked by white wire trim, and a more insane number of explosive rose bushes than Artemis has ever seen in her life, and probably ever will see. Her eyes rove up to the house, and upon closer inspection, it's clear that, yes, there are Vlatavan flags protruding from every crack in the stone walls, and that ostentatiousness is obviously one of the founding principles of the Vlatavan government, along with, like, duty and honor and law. And if the outside sounds completely ridiculous, the inside blows it out of the water. After Artemis steps awkwardly through one of the open French doors and into the bright, spacious sunroom, she has to freeze, to mentally run through all possible escape routes, because that is how on edge and out of place her surroundings make her feel. She's pretty sure that just by standing within 10 feet of so many priceless and breakable items, she's raising Oliver's insurance on them by dozens of figures. The floor is all hard wood, sleek and golden brown and polished to perfection, and the furniture alternates between white wicker and velvet-chaise lounges, and there are fancy-looking paintings of apathetic people in medieval clothes, and there are wall-to-wall bookshelves packed with color-assorted spines in at least 13 different languages, and there's a Pomeranian on a purple silk cushion chewing on his own leg.
Wait.
Artemis is about halfway through a double take when the closed rosewood double doors in the center of the opposite wall are suddenly flung open. The Pomeranian yips furiously and starts, like, vibrating in terror. Artemis jumps, loses her balance, and collapses back into one of the wicker chairs. Oliver comes storming in, and Artemis is suddenly reminded of the fact that he's actually a king. Because seriously, only kings ever enter rooms the way he does, with his suit coat slightly fluttering and his goatee bristling and the sunlight hitting him full blast like he's a more comical version of Louis XIV. Dinah, as put together as ever, and in even higher stilettos than Artemis saw last time, which she hadn't even thought was possible, bustles in behind him, wearing a black pencil skirt and a white blouse with a ruffle at the neck pinned with an ebony and gold brooch, her arms crossed symmetrically at her chest. Her earpiece is still firmly in place, but she's not wearing sunglasses. So, hey, a revelation! She has blue eyes! Oliver's nostrils flare as he surveys the room closely. His eyes finally fall on Artemis, who's still sprawled askew in the chair, and his eyebrows shoot up.
Oh my,
he croaks. It's worse than I thought. Ollie, please, Dinah says under her breath, and he deflates, looking shamefaced. She turns to Artemis and does that wry, knowing smile of hers. I can see you've already made yourself comfortable. Artemis coughs and manages to subtly scramble into a sitting position that's actually normal, taking extra care to keep her knees together and fold her hands in her lap. She doesn't really know what to do beyond that, though, so she just stares at them. Ollie stares back for exactly 3 seconds before clapping his hands and booming, "Banter, Artemis! One of the most basic talents a royal should have." Artemis says. "Followed," Oliver continues, "by charisma, waltzing, archery, calmness under pressure, and wilderness survival." He pauses, stroking his goatee pensively. "And toilet cleaning. That'll be very useful at the palace. Cut our janitorial budget down by at least 40%. "Anyway," Dinah cuts in warningly, giving a brisk sigh and putting her hands on her hips, looking Artemis up and down with a raised eyebrow and a half smirk. "Are you ready to get started?" "Was Jay Gatsby ready to be shot in his pool?" Artemis deadpans venomously. Oliver throws his head back and chortles before leaning down and clapping Artemis on the shoulder. "Acerbic wit," he exclaims approvingly. Artemis's whole arm is numb. Oliver must have taken secret Vlatovan nerve pinch lessons. "Marvelous. Now then, Dinah, where did we decide to begin?" Artemis can't be sure because it's quiet, but she swears she hears Dinah snort. Just in case, she glowers. "I believe we wanted to start out with presentation and appearance," Dinah replies, like she's relishing every word. "How does that sound, Artemis?" Artemis lets her knees slacken away from each other again and slumps churlishly. "Delightful," she growls. From the velvet cushion, there's a sudden intense gurgling slash snorting sound, sort of like a growl, but a growl with a sinus infection and too much mouthwash. Artemis's eyes dart over to find the Pomeranian aggressively chewing on one of the little gold tassels, his eyes wild. "Arsenal!" Oliver barks. He claps his hands loudly, 4 times, and Arsenal the Pomeranian yelps in terror, starting to turn around repeatedly on his cushion and still gurgle growling. "That is the most neurotic dog I've ever seen," Artemis says, before she can stop herself. Dinah does that near-silent snort again, but Oliver looks insulted. "Neurotic!" Oliver exclaims. "I'll have you know that Arsenal is the finest purebred Pomeranian the palace has seen in decades, and he's a marvelous hunter." Arsenal starts gnawing at his own leg again, and Oliver frowns. "Though I do wish he'd stop stress-chewing his own limbs. It's dreadful." He tugs at his goatee. "And he has such a temper." If you want the truth, the poofy little dog looks like even if he had the worst temper in the world, he'd be totally harmless, unless people could be incapacitated by being yipped at and having their angles chewed on. There's this disconcerting look in Arsenal's eyes, though. Like he's seen things. But, like, Oliver's his owner? So that would explain a lot. Jerking her out of her introspection, Oliver suddenly grabs her hand and yanks it up closer to inspect it. She's basically lifted half off the couch, hissing, "Ow, ow, ow, ow," as he practically dislocates her shoulder. "We'll have to grow these nails out," he says crisply, nodding as if agreeing with his assessment. "Yes, yes. Bitten down nails are an absolute deal-breaker. Shameful. Completely shameful." He releases her hand, and she drops back down onto the seat. And as Dinah looks on in blatant amusement, He stalks around to the back of the chair and grasps Artemis's braid, lifting it up and sniffing disdainfully.
Good grief, he murmurs in a tortured way,
and Artemis knows that if she could turn her head without ripping her scalp off, she'd find him covering his eyes with one hand.
How can you have so much beautiful hair and not have the slightest ability to do anything with it?
Hey, Artemis protests, annoyed.
None of this hay nonsense, Oliver chides her, letting go of the braid and spinning on his heel to appropriately start to pace the room. Artemis rubs her head where he'd pulled her hair and pouts at him. He puts one arm behind his back and gesticulates with the other, walking past the floor-to-ceiling windows.
You must speak with grace, poise, eloquence, wit, power, authority, conviction, diction, sometimes infliction.
He gets a wicked gleam in his eyes.
Quickly, what is the longest word you know?
Artemis flummoxes, all deer in the headlights of a monster truck.
Sesquipedalian, maybe.
Oliver doesn't look amused.
His loss. That was a great joke.
There you go, Dinah says. And when Artemis looks over, she is smiling with satisfaction. She raises her eyebrows at Oliver. Eloquence and wit.
Preceded by Oliver retorts, and then he wags his finger at Artemis.
Literally wags it! She is not making this up!
Young lady, we have to axe this and like and well poppycock. Amputate filter words immediately.
It's official. This guy is totally whacked.
I thought we were working on presentation. Artemis mumbles, instead of explaining to him that he is completely off his rocker.
Speak up, Oliver retorts. Artemis grinds her teeth.
Your Majesty, she tries again, fiercely enunciating each syllable with vitriol.
I was under the impression that we would be trying to improve my presentation today.
Being well-spoken is a very large part of presentation, Oliver declares, hooking his thumbs into the pockets of his brocade vest. Not only should you look at your worst presentable, at your best dazzling, but you should always sound presentable and articulate. They frown upon ums and likes over at the UN. Trust me.
The UN doesn't even know I exist, Artemis snaps. So I don't think it's quite fair to let them have a say.
They absolutely know you exist, Dinah interjects. Every government does. You aren't an international secret, Artemis. Your birth was one of the media events of the decade. It's just that right now, your location and identity are being concealed to best afford you a normal life.
Artemis frowns, her lips thinning. That's very considerate, she hisses.
Dinah shrugs. Oliver is back to being engrossed with Artemis's hair.
You'll have to learn to braid this properly, he decides,
and comb it more than just the once a day I assume you do. We'll go through traditional Vlatov and braiding techniques much later, but for now, just start trying to tame the mess for Pete's sake.
Artemis likes having virtually untamable hair. It makes her feel like a fierce jungle cat. She settles for pursing her lips and squinting pettishly up at Oliver, who grimaces.
Ugh, what an ugly expression, he says, waving a hand. We'll work on that too.
Artemis half gasps and half scoffs.
Is there anything about me you do like? She demands angrily. Not that she actually cares. She's just trying to draw his attention to the fact that he's being a total dickweed.
Oliver twirls the tip of his goatee and tilts his head, humming pensively.
You have lovely skin, Dinah comments, when he doesn't say anything.
And when you actually have the decency to smile, they're very nice.
Artemis stares at her.
She blinks,
feeling her lips twitch just slightly.
Thank you.
No ums, Oliver cuts in. Aside, he mutters, looks like we'll also have to work on listening abilities.
I can hear you just fine, Artemis snaps. Sorry for talking like a normal human being.
And you should be, Oliver riposts, but his expression is much more solemn than it's been all afternoon.
Artemis, don't you understand? When you engage in your duties as a princess, you no longer have the privilege of being able to act like a normal human being.
Artemis does not like the sound of that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the best person to rule over a large group of normal human beings a normal human being? She asks snidely. Revolutionary as it sounds, I'd actually like to be able to empathize with my subjects, Oliver.
Why is she already calling them her subjects?
She's letting them win!
Oliver sighs, putting his hands on his hips and surveying her with folded-in lips that makes his goatee rise. Dinah watches calculatingly from the background. Arsenal farts.
Well, I can't say that's not an admirable philosophy, he finally concedes.
And he's suddenly a lot softer than the blustering, flamboyant caricature of an eccentric ruler that she thought he was.
It kind of throws her off.
But it's difficult to rule objectively and effectively if you're trying to please everyone.
It never works out. Believe me, I've tried.
Artemis loosens, just a little.
Well, maybe that'll change someday, she mutters, toying with a loose thread in her skirt.
When her eyes drift up again, they see Oliver looking down at her with an air of pleasant surprise in his eyes. Dinah's expression matches. The tiniest smile works its way up the right corner of Artemis's mouth.
All right, then, Oliver says, clapping his hands together.
Wow, he does that a lot, and beaming.
How about some posture lessons? Stand up.
The smile drops like a penny from the top of the Empire State Building. Artemis is going to spare the super-specific blow-by-blow details, but she'll summarize it this way. Her feet feel like they're about to fall off, and she's now confident that she could walk in a circle through the sunroom blindfolded. Oh, and also, she's pretty sure there's an indentation in her skull now matching the approximate shape of Crime and Punishment. So, yeah, speaking of crime and unusual punishment, that's her first day of princess lessons. She drags herself home and flops face down onto her bed without dinner, and her mom just sets her alarm clock and drapes a blanket over her. Lesson schedule, September 12th through December 2nd. Week 1, presentation and appearance. September 12th through September 16th. Week 2. Posture. September 19th through September 23rd. Week 3. Formal dance. Waltz. September 26th through September 30th. Week 4. Vlatovan history, country study. October 3rd through October 7th. Week 5. Diction, Elementary Vlatovan, October 10th through October 14th. Week 6, Etiquette, Self-Defense, October 17th through October 21st. Week 7, Cooking and Baking, Paparazzi Avoidance, October 24th through October 28th. Week 8, Government Studies, November 1st through November 4th.
Halloween holiday.
Week 9. Crisis Management. National and International. November 7th through November 11th.
Week 10. Politics. November 14th through November 18th. Week 11. Subject of Princess's Choice. November 21st through November 25th. Week 12. Review, prepare for ball. November 28th through December 2nd. Friday, December 2nd. Introduction Ball, James Gordon Sr., Memorial Ballroom, 7 p.m. to 12 a.m.
Apparently, she's going to have homework in this thing, too. What beef does the universe have with her?
Five unread text messages. From Zatanna, 2. Grayson, 510-555-0711. Unknown number. From Grayson. So I heard Connie Boy was in detention with you. Tell him he still owes me a pair of safety scissors. From Zatanna. Yo, what's the World Civ homework? 99% sure my syllabus got lost in Wally's room. Ugh. From Zatanna. Where are you? Answer my text, girl! From 510-555-0711.
Hey, this is Wally. Z gave me your number. Whatever.
From unknown number.
Watching. Always watching.
510-555-0711. Add two contacts?
Yes.
Enter new contact's name.
Rudolph.
Rudolph was added to your contacts.